Welcome again to the Cannabis Investing Podcast, where we speak with C-level executives, analysts, and sector experts to provide actionable investment insight and the context with which to understand the burgeoning cannabis industry. I'm your host, Rena Sherbel. Hi again, everybody. Welcome back to the show. Great to have you listening with us. Today, we're talking again to Matt Hawkins, who's the founder of Entourage Effect Capital, who we've had on before. He was also the interim, or is the interim CEO until he becomes chairman again at Harborside, a legacy California operator. We talk again today about Harborside, where he sees the company as it transitions with some new acquisitions to new ownership, to new leadership, and where he sees the states in general as managing partner, as founder of Entourage Effect Capital, what that means there for the states, how he sees the states in general, how he sees investing in cannabis stocks, what the timeline is, how he sees it developing. A lot of great insight here. Hope you enjoy it. All right, Matt, welcome back to the Cannabis Investing Podcast. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. So thanks for coming back on.
You bet. Thanks for having me again.
So I wanted to ask you, because since we've talked, there's been some, different developments. Harborside has a new name, made some new acquisitions. Where do you see Harborside now, Statehouse? How are you thinking about your role as you're transitioning to a different role in the company? How are you looking at things over there?
Sure. So I'm now just, like I was before all this started, the non-executive chairman, and we've hired a fantastic CEO in Ed Schmaltz, who comes from a background of Goldman Sachs, CEO of Urban Leaf prior to the acquisition. He's got a super mind for retail, and with our now fully vertically integrated platform that we've built, I mean, arguably the largest in California. Now we're just in the middle of integration. We're already making great progress, and we're going to continue to tell our story and drive revenue and drive profits. And, one of these days, the cannabis markets on the public side will turn back to normal, because right now they're absolutely ridiculous because things are so cheap that these companies are actually performing well. And, but these things happen in public markets, and we're just going to continue to perform, and we'll see what happens here in the next several quarters.
So talk to us a little bit about the integration, because the acquisitions for Urban Leaf and Loudpack, people that are looking at the California market, I think, are excited about kind of you guys having more of a broader offering and a stronger presence in the state. But at the same time, I know that integration is easier said than done. How do you feel like you look at that as chairman, as CEO, as kind of incoming and outcoming executive teams? How do you guys broach that integration, and how do you work to do that integration?
Well, the good news is that we, when we announced the three-way merger, really effectively four-way when you count Sublime. We had already been integrating Sublime. So that had been going on for over a year. And then on top of that, we've got a world-class chief operating officer in Amar Iqbal, who comes, who's the CEO of Sublime. Amar has, supply chain management experience from Amazon. So he's just, he's an operator. So we'd already been integrating that platform. And then if you think about it, we announced the bolt on of the other three last fall. And so we really started the integration process then. Ed was, basically as a consultant to Harborside prior to the transaction, was starting to begin his work on integration and, combining the teams and figuring out where there was, duplicitous efforts. And so we've made a lot of progress. And so we're going to continue to do so, but I think it's going to take another quarter or so to really feel out where the additional synergies and cost savings are.
And how is it just from integrating the teams? How has that process been?
Remarkably seamless. Again, when you talk about doing something this Herculean from a transactional standpoint, he goes at the door, because in order to get a deal done, you have to start with that. And so luckily that's, you know, progressed as we've been going through the integration as well, is that there's, you know, no one's saying, well, we were better than this. You were terrible at this. It was all about, okay, what makes sense for Statehouse? Everybody's just acting like big boys and big girls, and we're, you know, starting to make a lot of progress.
And was it always the plan to have Ed come on as CEO? Was that from the get-go?
It certainly was, you know, the ideal situation. I mean, we needed things to fall in place, as we did a lot of things to fall in place in order just for this whole thing to happen. But it was the ideal situation, yes.
Because of where his experience is, because of how he's approaching the role, why would you say that's the perfect situation?
The above. I mean, he brings a cachet with him out of cannabis, but he also has spent time in cannabis, both with Calyx and with Urban. And so it was a perfect mix for us.
So something you mentioned, you know, kind of as investors, I imagine as executives, we're all looking at these share prices and what's happening in the sector and wanting it to get better and waiting for the catalyst that might make it a little bit better and maybe string together a couple catalysts. But there's like some serious discounted valuations happening in the sector for anyone watching. How do you kind of manage through that? And how is your approach? Is it okay, this is our thesis, we're not kind of going to get too scared because we know what's coming. There are so many unknown variables. We're just kind of going to do what we think works best. How do you approach it while navigating the reality of a protracted process, but also having to answer to shareholders, having to kind of maintain the vision that you have for the stock as well as the company? How do you address that?
Well, first and foremost, we can't control the markets.
That's for sure.
There's a serious shortage of liquidity in the cannabis marketplace right now, just because of the fact that institutional capital is not available. And so retail investors, by their nature, get skittish, and when things start to look poorly at a macro level, they get in and out of positions very, very quickly. And so we can't control that. What we can control is what our balance sheet looks like. What we can control is how quickly we're able to integrate and how quickly we can drive profits. Because when things do turn and we start putting, you know, one quarter on top of the other in terms of positive earnings and EBITDA, we're going to be, you know, actively trying to not only position, but also increase it through, you know, some of our ability through share buybacks, through, you know, buying more stock as a firm too. I mean, we're going to show our support in the extent that we can. I mean, right now there's a, you know, we're locked up because of material non-public information. So once we start announcing, once we announce first quarter, I think we'll be able to start buying again, and we're going to try to do it. We've got a lot of cash on hand. We're starting to make progress in, you know, in this integration, as I mentioned. So we're in a really good spot. It's just, we're just not getting any help from the markets.
Yeah. I would say the other thing that is, or another thing that is also kind of quite treacherous territory, specifically in California, is, you know, the fact that the illicit market is still such a strong presence. How do you look at that as, you know, from the legal market? How do you look at the illicit market, and how do you guys navigate the fact that the illicit market is still, you know, powerful?
We need help from the state. And I've been saying this for years now, is that until the state of California decides to act smart and realize that with less red tape, with reduced taxes for the legalized industry, that we're not going to be able to convert as much of the illicit market as we want to. And if some of the folks in Sacramento don't be smart and realize, just to get their arms, it's very commonsensical. You lower taxes, you tamp down the black market, the illicit market, and you drive more tax revenue to the state because there's more revenue coming in because you have a larger legalized market. It's very, very simple. But for whatever reason, you know, the elected officials in Sacramento just can't seem to understand that. And prior to COVID, Gavin Newsom had said that it was backwards and he needed to make changes. And of course, then he got his arms, you know, his playful with the pandemic. So hopefully now that things have quieted down on that front, make some real progress. But until then, there's nothing we can do. So common sense, much like this entire country, just needs to prevail.
Yeah. Yeah. Here's hoping. So as you look at the states developing, are you guys even looking beyond California at this point?
State house, but remember, my day job is the managing partner and founder of Entourage Effect Capital, which is one of the largest investors in Harborside. But as a firm, raising our third fund, and we're actively deploying out of it right now. And you know, we've made multiple investments already out of that fund in the Midwest, and we're actually looking at things in the Southeast too. So we look at that geographical landscape, you know, very, very seriously, and think it's the next, you know, big opportunity, especially with what's happening in Connecticut coming online as well. I mean, it's you're talking about new, so to speak, over on the East Coast, and it's incredibly exciting. And we think the opportunity and the time set, especially with depressed valuations from a private standpoint.
And how do you feel like that there's an approach for like looking at the states? Do you feel like there is an approach that works across the states, or do you feel like it's right now it's a little bit more regional? How do you kind of see that developing, and how do you look at it right now?
Most of the states that have had been getting their cannabis programs launched quickly and effectively have been the ones where they've had limited license issuances, a healthy mix of social and merit-based applicants receiving them. And it aligns very well with investors like us who look for people with skin in the game, who have worked hard to get a license, and then are looking for to either scale their business and partner with groups that maybe invest a little bit earlier than us.
And what are some of the deals that you're looking at in term, like what lanes of the sector are you mostly looking at?
A lot of single state operators that are looking to get into multiple states, or like I said, dominate their own states. And two examples are Curio Wellness in Maryland, Eves in Missouri, invested in ancillary plays like Hound Labs, which is the only THC breathalyzer in the market right now. Impairment and companies or even insurance companies that are looking to figure out, you know, how does THC impact? They're going from one state to another. At point in time, there's going to be a level of THC content in your body that is going to be considered an impairment.
And are there parts, like, are you guys kind of avoiding cultivation, or are there parts of the sector that you're avoiding at this point in the cycle?
Question. So I think everything we're looking at from a operational standpoint is either 100% vertically integrated or capital to get that way. So yes, we don't think that it's a good idea just to invest straight in cultivation, even in some of these states where, you know, the price per pound is just outrageously high. I mean, that's going to normalize. And I mean, it's a commodity. Look at the states where it's been around for a while. I mean, there's no getting around that. So I don't think that's a tremendous, you know, MOIC opportunity for us. Integrated, then you can obviously capture margin at each level, and that's therefore it's a different story than just doing, you know, cultivation play.
Do you feel like the vertically integrated players are going to be the ones that kind of capture most of the states in terms of developing kind of the top players in the states?
I think especially the single state ones that are looking to, you know, take that next step to either, you know, be acquired by the large MSOs or even become a large MSO. I think that once, I mean, we're all in this to see what happens in the not too distant future, change at the federal level. there'll be some type of a component where the social equity aspect of this too is part and parcel with that, but maybe not combined as one, as what I think the some of the politicians in Washington are trying to do. If we can separate the two and get them both over the goal line, I think that's best for the industry. Not to mention the Safe Banking Act that is, we think, within 6 to 18 months. But when that happens, you're going to have not only institutional capital come, but you're going to have all kinds of different industries enter, you know, big pharma, tobacco, alcohol, but and CPG companies. And all these companies are going to want to be an MSO, or they're going to want to acquire an MSO, or they're going to want to partner with an MSO. And that's going to take big bucks to do that. And I think building scale with those companies and those that are soon to be big boys in their state or in multiple states, that's where the money's going to be made. And we're trying to position ourselves with that vision in mind for, you know, generate the best returns we can for our investors.
And do you feel like as you're watching these brands develop across the state, do you feel like that there's, you know, something that players have learned, let's say in California, that they can bring to New York? Or do you feel like a good operator is a good operator and they're going to figure it out kind of no matter where they're coming from or how they're even specifically growing their cannabis?
It's a good question. I mean, obviously it's so geographical from a cultivation standpoint. I mean, growing in Northern California in an outdoor greenhouse is completely different than growing, you know, in the middle of winter in an indoor facility in Massachusetts. It's just that part of it is totally different. However, I think that to your point, good operators are good operators. And if they've had success with supply chain management in other states, they're going to have similar success because they're going to figure it out in the state that just entered. So just like we've always done, we're going to continue to back excellent management teams, support them when necessary at the board level. And even if we have to get involved and roll our sleeves up operationally.
So like given your experience and role with Harborside and your in-depth kind of insight into the California market, I'm interested because, you know, as you mentioned, like with the Northeast coming online and that's going to be such a big just swath of the population, just the numbers game is going to be so big. And then obviously you factor in like the culture, you know, aspect of what New York and that whole region brings to legal cannabis. Are those two regions, is there something that you're thinking about each of those regions? Or is it more of a broader kind of picture that you have in your mind?
Pretty broad. And I think it's really going to be opportunity driven. I mean, we're talking to people in all the states you've mentioned, but they're all, at the end of the day, competing for a limited amount of money that both we have and the industry has. And so even though we're, you know, this is our flagship fund and it's when we close it, in our final close, we're hopefully going to have $150 million to deploy in aggregate. Still not a lot of money. And there's only a few other firms like us that have that kind of capital wherewithal to provide the jet fuel that this industry needs. And so there's not a simple answer to this. The simple answer is to get institutional capital involved and be in a position to where you can monetize that when they do.
So as we're waiting for the institutional capital to pour in, how would you advise investors, you know, looking at the space that are either invested or wondering why they're invested or thinking about being invested? How do you advise investors at this point?
Well, without giving investment advice, I think that the answer is to be patient. I mean, this isn't a get rich quick play. This is a jump in, enjoy the ride, and in 3 to 5 years, if not sooner, we could see something that will change the landscape, you know, from a, you know, catalytically to where the valuations are going to skyrocket. That's really it. It's just you got to practice patience.
And what do you feel like, or do you feel like, what pricks a pin in the kind of balloon of the bullishness around the cannabis industry? Do you feel like, let's say safe banking doesn't happen in 12 to 18 months or whatever it is, the catalyst that doesn't appear the way we want it or when we want it, what do you think about kind of the protracted process, and what aspects of that worry you more than others?
Well, I try not to think about it. Retail investors, as I keep saying, get skittish when they think something's going to happen and it doesn't. Stagnant investor involvement now is only going to drive things lower. And that's when the opportunities get so real. And you know, I think they already are, but my gosh, and then it's just going to be, you know, those of us with money are going to be real excited for that. But for the industry, I don't want that to happen. I'd rather it start to get back on its feet a bit at the macro level, and hopefully some positive momentum at the federal level in some form or fashion can provide that.
And do you ever have to caution or kind of advise like the smaller operators that you talk to in terms of, you know, much like the retail investor, they also need a kind of money to get through a circuitous path, a tricky path, like the regulations are onerous, that you need much more money than you probably think that you do. What kind of, or is that a dialogue that you have with kind of smaller operators and trying to kind of advising them how to withstand the storm?
Daily. We've been having those conversations with our investments since, you know, before COVID. You have to manage your cash. It's the most important thing for any operator in the industry. Period, full stop, end of discussion.
All right, very good. Matt, I appreciate you coming on. Anything that you would kind of leave investors with, either in Harborside or just cannabis investors in general?
Patience. And it will be, I think, paid back in spades. Just got to have some patience.
Thanks so much for listening to the Cannabis Investing Podcast. Subscribe or follow us on Seeking Alpha, Libsyn, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Stitcher. And we'd really appreciate it if you left us a review on Apple Podcasts. It helps other investors find our show and makes us feel fantastic. If you have feedback or questions, we'd love to hear from you at RENAPOD@SeekingAlpha.com. That's RENA, the plus sign, CANPOD at SeekingAlpha.com. Nothing on this podcast should be taken as investment advice of any sort. I'm Long Trueleaf, Chiron, Isracan Biosciences, the parent company, Air Wellness, and the ETF MSOS. Subscribe to us on Libsyn, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Stitcher. Thanks so much for listening, and see you next time.